time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 26th of March 2011. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them in Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday the 26th of March, Emma Boa Warner talked to Gary Wilton from Auckland Council about walkways. She talked to James the Gardener from Greenscape Landscapes. And she talked to Denise Roach from the Waiheke Local Board about Auckland Unleash.
Welcome to the studio, Gary.
Thank you.
And walkways.
Yeah, I guess firstly I just wanted to encourage people to get out on some of the bush walkways when it's raining like this. It can be really beautiful and really refreshing and quite different to be in the bush in the rain. It's also a good chance to see some of the streams on the island that you really don't get to notice
otherwise
the rest of the time.
Yeah.
You know, the reserve at Little Oneroa, behind Little Oneroa Shop, from Ocean View to Goodwin, or Victoria Reserve in Onatangi, or any of the forest and bird reserves, particularly at Onatangi. Victoria in Onatangi is very good.
Right.
It's just a beautiful time to be out. It takes the sting out of the rain being in the bush. It's not actually cold out there.
No, it's not. I've got to say, we did a bushwalk one time at Whakanefa in the rain.
Yeah.
And it was so different. It was one of my favourite walks that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And not the one that I got lost on for 2 hours. Again, we won't talk about that. But it has a whole different feel. I felt kind of like childlike in a way, because you're sort of going through the bushes and it's really really different without the sun beating down, and there's different noises as well, because all the different insects and buggies and stuff making their calling noises. I love it.
So take the kids out and get them wet. Don't bring up kids that think that getting that rain is made of acid and dissolves you into steaming pile on the pavement.
Yeah, get your gum boots on.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some particular walks you wanted to talk about as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, I thought it would be a nice chance this morning just to introduce people to a new concept that we've been working on with the local board. We're looking at the potential for a round island walkway.
Right.
So as the South Island in particular, and a couple of places in the North Island have great walks which are 4 or 5 day tramps or longer, that are packaged up and named, and you know, you'd be familiar with them, the Milford Track, the Abel Tasman, the Heafy Track, those walks.
Yep.
We've got the potential over here with 67 kilometres of track on Waiheke now. And
is that what we've got?
Yeah, and so what we've done is looked at a circuit, putting together our existing tracks and some connections alongside the road to give us a round island walkway.
Excellent.
So that will be a pretty much a 7 day trip, and each day would be quite distinct. You know, Waiheke's interesting for me because it's got so many facets. You know, you've got those undeveloped farm type areas down the bottom end with the views out to sea, and then you've got the vineyard areas, you've got bush, you've got open coastal stuff, you've got urban sort of back garden, bottom of the back garden tracks, which people from town love, and they get a chance to glimpse
how we
live. We think it's an attractive proposition for people from Auckland either to come over for a week and do it, maybe stay in one place and get dropped off and picked up each day, because you're never too far from one point.
That's what I was going to ask. How's the infrastructure around that going to work?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite different to the Heafy Track and those ones where you go in at one end into a long tunnel through the bush in the wilderness and come out 5 days later.
So we wouldn't
lighter.
Yeah, we wouldn't literally be setting people off for 7 days and not seeing them until the end.
They'd
be staying in nice accommodation.
I think we'd want to be able to offer a range of accommodation, and there's plenty of accommodation and really professional tourism operators on the island. So hopefully what this would do is create new demand which they could fill. We'd probably also look at dock-style campsites at strategic points along the way, so it was something that was still accessible for everybody.
For backpackery type people. Yeah,
and probably sub-backpacker, sort of I think of them the Trail Mix and Scroggin people who are probably lifelong trampers.
Yes.
And prepared to sleep under a tent small enough for them to carry. Someone pretty much like yourself.
Yes, absolutely, lifelong tramper. Thank you. Okay, yeah, and Scroggin, your good lady actually introduced me to Scroggin on one of our mad walks one time, actually, and yes, she had to explain to me what it was. I thought it was alcohol. I thought it was like cider or something. I was like, I'm not having cider on a healthy walk. Oh, go on then. And she produced something that definitely wasn't cider. So how far along the line are you with looking at that?
We've developed a concept plan here on the island, working with...
When you say we, this is council-led? Is it your initiative, though?
I've been keen to look into it as I've sort of settled into the job over the last few years and champion, but it's something for the island, really. But I guess the distinction is it's an idea that's been born and being driven from the island rather than
something over the water
from town
trying to make money out of us.
Lovely people that they are, and I know your husband's one of them.
Sort of.
It's something that's sort of been born and driven from the island, and hopefully something that we can all enjoy as much as our visitors, and something that we can take our visitors on, and then we'll encourage people to come over to Waiheke and spend
of course,
time with us.
Yeah, it's going to support local industry hugely.
It'll probably be a slow starter, but what we need. So basically the concept plan lays out the route, sells the idea, and gets people enthusiastic so that we can raise the investment that we need essentially for signage. So it needs to be pretty much like a breadcrumb trail around the island. So people get off the ferry and pretty much able to follow signs all the way. They don't need to be fantastic map readers. It should be something that's accessible to anybody who's capable of walking for that long, because it's not wilderness survival type situation.
There was something actually that I was meaning to ask you, talking about the walks, and I've been meaning to ask you for some time. What sort of capacity do we have for any less able-bodied walkers?
It is something that I'm quite aware of, because it's such a privilege to be able to get out to some of these places. And I think it's a fact that our tracks are ostensibly at a pretty low standard in terms of accessibility. They're relatively narrow, not even necessarily always flat across ways. We have steps where the slope gets too steep. I think realistically, when we design new walkways and new reserves, we're looking at providing what wheelchair access we can. So at Mackenzie Reserve, we specifically created a glade down at the bottom, an open area which could be accessed pretty much on the flat from the end of Empire Avenue. So it's something that is in there, but with our topography, wheelchair access is unlikely for the foreseeable future.
Right.
There are some four-wheel drive type tracks, you know, X Farm tracks that we've got there that could be brought up to grade, and Fokinafer do a good job with their walkways. But I guess over and above that, we look to continually upgrade our tracks in terms of the New Zealand walkway standards, so that they are as flat across ways, and so you don't have to be if you're not totally sure-footed, you can still walk them comfortably.
That would be something that I would really like to be addressed for sort of more comprehensively. Mm. If say a new package came out, that there would be an addendum packaged with it that perhaps for the elderly or those less able-bodied in whatever capacity, that there were certain elements that were already featured in that they could partake in.
Well, one of the things that that we've got on this island obviously is some access to some great countryside and great views from the car. So we've been looking at a great walk principle for Great Barrier. But we've also acknowledged, because of the scale of the place and the time that people spend there, a lot of the visitors, that we could just package up a great drive as well, which would say you pick up your hire car and this is where we recommend you go. We recommend you stop here, 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 here and here. You know, maybe jump out here for 10 minutes, walk up to this spot and you'll get a better view.
They do that in various parts of Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that they do the... They do, of course, they do the one Melbourne, the long... Oh, what's the road? The big long road that...
The coastal route, is it?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Pacific, yeah.
Oh, anyway, I know where I'm
at. I went to Australia once.
Okay.
That was quite nice.
Oh, good, I'm glad it was
no
nice.
Need to go back.
No need. Okay, fair enough, fair enough. I spent 3 months actually driving in an old 70s V-dub camper van from Perth up to Darwin. Three and a half months, actually. That was pretty amazing. The West Coast.
Beautiful.
It was very beautiful. Anyway, okay, well, thanks. That sounds really interesting. So just to reiterate, what step you're at with that and how, when may people
We're looking for funding ostensibly within council, trying to get it on the council long-term planning. So realistically, we are working with the board to create the last piece of the linkage, hopefully over the next 2 years, which is Te Matuku to Pearl Bay down the bottom end. We've got a lovely coastal reserve that we can put a walkway through. We're looking for probably $1 million worth of signage. So I think realistically we're 2 to 5 years, depending on how it goes.
Indeed, maybe whether we get any private investors would... Would council look at private partnership?
Not necessarily private, I don't think, because it's a public asset and we'd want to keep it that way. But we may be able to work with some of the trusts and lotteries and ASB Community Trust and lovely people like that.
Lovely people.
Lovely people.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks very much for coming in, Gary. I know you've got an exciting meeting that you have to dash off to.
Yes, that's what I like to tell you when I come in, just to make sure I can get away.
What are you trying to say? Anyway, thanks very much, Gary, and see you next month. I'd like to welcome James from Greenspace Landscape. Hello, James.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I think there was talking heads.
Was it Talking Heads?
Yeah.
It was, thank you, yeah. One of my favourites that I just totally forgot. Talking Heads, Once in a Lifetime. Mm. How could I forget that track? Mm. I do enjoy Talking Heads.
Yes.
Anyway, so this is your regular slot. You've been doing this for quite some time now.
Well, I was just looking through my notes, and I think I've been coming for a year now, on and off.
Really?
So
fantastic.
So I'm just about to regurgitate all the stuff from last year.
Oh, yeah. And why not? That's what teachers do every year. And we're both ex-teachers, so yeah, we understand.
Yeah.
So what are we going to talk about this month?
We're going to talk about, we'll talk about the month of April, and... And gosh, you know, with March being a little bit wetter than usual, we've just had an enormous amount of growth in the garden, and you'll probably see a lot of fresh growth on the hedges that you might have. If you've got a pittosporum hedge or a grizzolinia hedge, you'll just be rubbing your hands with glee, I think, this morning, because you've got quite a good... you'll be quite satisfied with the amount of growth as compared to last year, where everything was dry as a bone till May.
It was, wasn't it? Because I can remember you having to come in and talk about sort of emergency measures that what people could do to try and save some plants.
This time
last year.
Oh yeah. So I mean, it was all about mulching and to retain moisture.
Yeah.
And I remember the council driving round the streets, watering all the plants with their big trucks. So
were they?
Yeah. So it was quite serious, I think, for a lot of, and the Te Tauke Reserve, we had the possibility of some of the bigger trees turning up their toes. So
that's right, but very different this year. So
very different.
What are you advising?
Oh, what am I
What are you talking about? I wasn't going to say it like that.
Well, I think what we're trying to do, what I'll try to talk about today is just some general things, again, about the month ahead. I mean, you may have been planting trees already, and that's great if you have. But certainly April, this coming April, is the month to plant. So if you're into planting some trees or some shrubs, ornamentals, so things that look pretty, I would definitely be doing it this month. And the two reasons for that is it gives a good lead time into spring, so it allows the plant to establish its roots, and also it's certainly, well, I'd just call it watering in. You know, you sort of, you're not having to sit out there with your hose and night after night trying to keep them alive, because April is certainly the time where you know, you've got a lot of self-watering going on.
Okay.
Yeah, the other thing too, you might notice that the, you know, exceptional amount of growth again, but with lawns. And one of the things that you probably having more success with too this year is your lawn. So if you've seeded a lawn last month or prepared and seeded a lawn, you'll certainly be getting some germination now. And one of the key things to look out for is obviously trying to make sure that the growth is pretty consistent all over the ground, and
right.
one of the ways of doing that is you may notice that some of the older gardens have a rather rusty, round, old roller in the corner of the garden, and one of the reasons for using a roller to establish your lawn is to spread, to keep the surface even, but to also spread out the seed as well. So it's a way of sort of squashing and training the grass to do
right.
what it needs to do. So So once the middle of April comes with your lawn, and if you've seeded this lawn and it gets to about 30 millimetres, then you could probably, 30 or 40, you could start giving it a bit of a mow.
Yeah, what's your opinion on over-mowing?
I think if you've got a warm season grass, I mean, what I'm talking about at the moment is cool season grasses, so fine fescues, certainly grasses that... you know, that tolerate the cooler conditions. Bad mowing would be with your warm season grasses, would be mowing them too short.
Yeah.
Like ideally, if you mow something like a couch grass, which is a warm season grass, or even our friend kikuyu, which I want to talk about in a minute too. You don't need to mow them to the point of scalping them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's. I think it's a real shame when you see a lawn like that.
Yeah. I think people tend to. Use the weed trimmer or the weed whacker,
yep.
or the weed eater scrub cutter, and that can cause a lot of wheels in your lawn, and takes a wee while for lawns to recover too, because if you're using something that bites into the soil rather than mows over the top, then it can be a bit of a unsightly look.
Yeah, and I just think it's just a real shame. I think I love to see sort of luscious looking grass, and if a lawn's been scalped, it's quite an English thing, that, actually, I must say. That, you know, it's considered, in fact, I had a discussion with somebody yesterday on the ferry about lawns, and we were talking about the difference between sort of a healthy looking garden, which tends to have, in my opinion and his as well, sort of a slightly longer looking grass, which might encourage some different sort of animals in there, possibly, or some wildlife, rather, I was meaning. Or that sort of very English, everything got to be neat and trimmed to within an inch of its life. And I actually prefer something a little bit overgrown myself.
Yeah. Well, if you've got you've got a verge in front of your house, which most people do, and the council are not partial to mowing all of the verge, they may do. Sometimes they don't, for want of time or money or whatever. You can actually, if you let your grass grow and the grass on the verge is just consistently grass, you can create a meadow effect with.
That's what we were talking about, sort of a meadow effect. Go on.
And for all intents and purposes, it can look like rather nice. And then eventually, when you've had enough of it and it starts to brown off in late summer, you could probably whack it down and use the use the trimmings as hay, and that's a good way of, you know, you could use that to compost it and what have you. But yeah, it's an amazing look. I've seen a property where there's three or four feature trees, nikar trees, and all the person has done is just grown grass long to a meadow effect around these feature trees. And it looks really stunning.
Does it?
And, you know, in the wind, you know, it's quite, you know, because there are places on Waiheke where it gets windy.
Yeah.
And one of the nicest things to have in your garden is a plant that's tolerant to wind. So if you want to have a cheap and or economic way of creating a sort of a lovely effect, I mean, why not go for a meadow?
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And where are we? Where are we up to with your copious
notes? Copious amounts of notes here from last year. No. These are new ones.
I know. Yeah. They're neater.
Yep.
Your writing's improving. Yep. Mark's out of 10.
It's getting better. A couple more things, really, for this month. If you're into sowing sowing from seed, then perhaps you might want to think about doing some sage or rosemary, thyme, chives, if you're that way inclined. I know you can just pop down to the local nurseries and what have you and just pick up a small seedling and off you go, but if you're feeling a bit more adventurous, April's certainly the month to do that sort of thing.
Okay. So that's sort of, if you haven't got a greenhouse space, that's on your windowsill?
Windowsill, yep, warm sunny spot or something that gets at least...
You know, do you cover them? Let's talk for those people that have never done it before.
Well, I mean, you're in a part of New Zealand where growing conditions are quite favourable, so you could probably just plant the seed in a little pot, or you could get one of those fancy or fancier type pieces of sod wrapped in hessian.
Oh yes, yeah.
And you could try propagating from that way. No, I think you'd be surprised how successful you'll be. Yeah, sorry, the other thing I wanted to talk about this month was feijoas.
Is that... Oh, feijoas. I was going to get excited and go, is that plant of the month?
No, not quite.
I was preempting.
I mean, a lot of people have got feijoas.
They have.
And they're falling everywhere. And if you don't pick them up at the moment, they create a bit of a mess as you're mowing them. But if you're one that collects and uses feijoas... Because once they have fruited, you could probably think about giving your feijoa tree a bit of a trim.
And you can make feijoa jam.
Oh, yeah, feijoa jam. But if you want a nice, clean feijoa fruit,
yes,
one thing you could do is take perhaps... So just make sure that your trees are mulched and just spread the mulch.
You've talked about this before,
And that can create... That's probably my notes last year.
Oh, no. I'm learning. Yes.
So you can actually keep the fruit nice and clean and maybe a little less damaged if you mulch a little bit further out from the base of the tree. And just that might create a soft landing for your fruit.
Ah, a bit of a cushion. Right.
So that sort of leads us into the last...
The last bit. Are we ready? Are you giving me the nod?
Are we going to have a song?
Plant of the Month.
Plant of the Month. All right. So Plant of the Month is...
Plant of the Month for this month is drum roll.
Is something we might know quite a lot about. Is kaikuyu. Now, some people... When I mention this word, people sort of roll their eyes and despair about kaikuyu, especially people who are interested in growing lovely, fine... well-cut lawns. Now kaikuyu, as you all know, is everywhere, and it's in everybody's lawns.
Yep.
And it's quite an interesting grass. Like, and people call it a weed, but as we all know, weeds are just plants in the wrong place. So
exactly.
I thought I'd talk about this plant because everybody knows of it, and I learned some quite interesting facts about it the other day, so I might share those with you.
Please do.
Okay, well, first of all, it has a botanical name which is rather hard to pronounce, so I'll give it my best shot. Penicetium calen destinum. So I won't say that again.
Well, go on.
Because I've got a tongue tied. But That is the botanical name for it, and it is a tropical grass, and it was brought here just about 100 years ago. So it's been around for a very, very long time, and it's from Kenya.
Ah, is it really?
Mm. And it was named after a Kenyan tribe. And it's found in Australia and, sort of the warmer parts of Australia, Queensland, and throughout the Pacific. And it's reason that it is here and why people brought it here is a pasture grass.
Ah, okay.
Mm. So, and that's why we have gardens that have with lawns that have lots of different things in it. So if you look at a typical lawn, you might find six or seven different species of grass, and that's because over the years people have been trying in agriculture anyway to find the perfect grass, perfect pasture. So yes, so that's the reason we have it. And so it was introduced because it's got vigorous growth. So we all know that over a certain period, I think it's like over a day or two, it can grow 2.5 centimetres.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like magic grass.
Well, it is magic
grass.
Or
is it? Is it more like super grass?
Well, that's what everybody thought, I think, originally, and they tried to control it. And, really the super grass has just gotten out of hand, as everybody knows. And, so by the 1970s, everybody was thinking, gosh, what are we going to do with it? It's just too much for us to handle. So really all we can do with this grass now is manage it. And if you can put a nutshell on it, it's the politician of green grass. And it says it looks good, promises the earth, but doesn't deliver and can get out of hand.
Right. Well, I'm hoping our local politician that's coming on the show isn't listening to this bit right now. But anyway.
Sorry, there's a quote from somebody else. It's
yeah,
not me.
Yeah. No, that's very funny. Yeah, yes. That's excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So there are lots of pluses and minuses about this plant of the month. But really, if you control it, then it's going to be something that'll grow over clay, grow in sand, can control.
So it's very useful.
It is very useful. But on the other flip side, you've got to control it. So if you've got a ditch or a swampy bit down the bottom of your garden and you don't trim it and don't control it, it really does become a problem because it gets in everything and everywhere. So it's something you...
A bit triffid-like.
Exactly. Definitely triffid. So if you've got a lawn mowing business, that is something that you're going to be trimming a lot of.
Right.
And you feel quite strongly that it shouldn't be spread around. A management thing is to actually clean your tools and what have you to stop that actual spread of kaikuyu.
Got you.
But, I mean, ultimately, you know, there's little things you can do to manage it, but I don't think we'll ever get rid of that plant of the month.
Right. But what an interesting plant of the month, originating from Kenya.
Mm.
Oh, you do have some interesting facts and figures for me, Mr. Yes, James. Yes. Mr. James, so you do.
Yes.
Right, okay. Are you done? Is that it?
I think so,
Can I go now? No, thank you very much.
No
that
problem.
Was actually really, really interesting. As you know, I am an avid grass maintainer and just very interested in these plants that can sort of take over.
Yeah. Okay.
So thank you very much. That was excellent. And
no problem.
Look forward to next month and next month's Plant of the Month.
Okay.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke People, Events and Issues. Brought to you by Island, Art, Craft, Giftware, Clothing and Bric-a-Brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
I'd like to welcome to the studio Denise Roche. Hello.
Hello, Emma.
Hi. Thank you very much for coming in on this Saturday morning. I know you have lots of other things you could be doing, and I did only call you last night, but as a true trooper, you were like, yes, of course I will, Emma. Thank you for asking me.
Well, that's the thing with being a local politician, is that if you get these opportunities to actually talk about politics, then obviously
it's you want to grab them.
Yeah, and I'm really keen to do that.
Great.
Well, the other thing is that part of being a local representative is getting the information out there. So thank you for the opportunity.
My pleasure. Now, what I invited you on to talk about is the Auckland Unleashed that happened this Wednesday. Sounded really, really interesting.
Yeah, it was actually. So what it is, we'll start with the kind of the overview of what it is. You know, remember when we're all that kind of hoo-ha in the step up to the super city, and it was quite a traumatic and difficult time.
It was indeed. Particularly for those of us that were involved in from the inside of Auckland Council, as I was at some point, people that we know. You know, it was a very difficult time for some people.
Absolutely. And staff now, I think particularly, I mean, it's not just communities, it's also all politicians, but it's also the staff are having to kind of cope with the pace of the change and the massive change that has occurred. One of the changes that the legislation brought in is the requirement for the mayor to create a spatial plan for the entire region. That's a huge area covering 1.4 million people, spanning from the south, Franklin, through to the north, Rodney, and us as well here in the Hauraki Gulf. And the mayor was required by legislation to create a vision, but then also to create a spatial plan. So international experts say that this can take, I think it was Vancouver, took 8 years.
Really? That long?
Yeah. So the first draft of this was unleashed on Wednesday. And that this is the start of creating that spatial plan for Auckland. And that's why it's called Auckland Unleashed. And to develop a draft over that in a period of, 5 months is quite phenomenal. So all power to the council staff and the mayor who've been driving this and driving it, you know, really at a cracking pace.
He's quite impressed me, actually, so far.
He's impressed me as well, actually. He does have a fantastic vision.
And a good charisma.
Yeah, he is.
He's got a good sort of vibe about him. And I don't know if I know that counts for something. I mean, obviously, it's not the... You need the depth behind that.
Well, I get the sense that he's a very genuine and sincere person.
Yeah.
He does have charisma. He's not afraid to challenge the status quo. Seeing him in action on Wednesday was brilliant, because while this is a draft document at this stage, and there's going to be a massive consultation process to get people to contribute. He's very much people focused, but the whole day on Wednesday was kind of directed at the senior politicians. So the Minister of Local Government, Rodney Hyde, was in the front row the entire day. The Prime Minister was there as well. And the Prime Minister spoke after the Mayor. And the Prime Minister was kind of doing the... we don't necessarily want to fund the vision that's coming through from Auckland. That was the subtext. Actually, it wasn't even a subtext. It was pretty clear. And the whole day was kind of focused on this economic development of the larger Auckland region as a way of trying, I think, to get the business people and the national conservative politicians on side. So I thought that was quite clever, although personally I was kind of disappointed going, hey, where are the people in all this? But once you start looking at the document, it's very people-focused. And I think that's the mayor is being quite deliberate in the way he pitches this. But it's a fantastic vision. It really is. To make Auckland our most livable city, you know, in the world. And we've got some really good starting points for that. And I get caught up in the mayor's optimism about it, really.
Excellent. Well, that's what he needs to be able to carry people with him.
Yeah.
With his vision. And it is his. I like the way he's taking ownership of it. I actually like that, and the fact that he's saying he's putting all of his passion into it.
Yeah, definitely. And he's a very passionate person. And that's the, and so is his deputy. Penny Hulse is fantastic.
Yes, yes.
And she's a very people-focused person as well. So the way this draft document and it is, 220 pages, including the appendices, of information about where we should be planning, what we should be doing with our city by the year 2030. We're required to do that, and we need to do that because we by 2030, the population in Auckland will be 2.1 million people. And so there are massive challenges with that. How do we maintain...
That sort of population growth, the housing that's needed, the infrastructure of
transport
to name just a couple.
Now, the mayor was really clear, and this is the conflict with central government, and it will carry on being a conflict for some years to come, I believe. But the mayor was very clear that we need to be getting private cars off the road. We need to be investing in rail and fast, efficient, clean rail. So that means that we need to be focusing on developing the CBD rail loop. And he mentioned two others, rail to the airport and back, and also rail to the North Shore tunnel. Those are massive infrastructure projects.
Huge.
And so we need to be looking at how we can fund that, because it's gonna require something like that in order for us to get around the city. We can hardly get around at the moment with 1.4 million.
Yeah.
And businesses really suffer for that, but actually so do people, and our quality of life does.
I was about to say, as a regular, I now commute to the North Shore daily during the week, and I find it quite hard. Last Friday it took me an hour and a half to get from what would normally be a 20 minute route if the traffic was clear.
Oh God,
I was I was nearly crying, to be honest. I was tired, I was grumpy, and I just wanted to be on that boat, see a few friendly faces, and go home.
Yeah.
And I was just stuck. It's something that we need now before there's any big population boom.
Absolutely. And we're kind of faced with a Minister of Transport, Stephen Joyce, who's basically put out government papers saying, well, actually, I think we should have urban sprawl. We should be sprawling. We should be spending more and more and more on roads. Now, spending more on roads is good to get business for businesses, right?
Yeah.
But it's actually really crappy for the environment. The Auckland Unleashed plan talks about we need to be an eco-city.
Absolutely.
And, we are contributing, I can't remember, I'll have to look it up properly, but it's a phenomenal amount of emissions coming from Auckland comes from transport.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, transport and building are two biggest emitters.
So that's electricity
use
and transport. And so, getting our public transport systems running properly is kind of where we need to be heading. So we're in direct
opposition,
opposition to central government. And I mean, I have to say, central government has had this term of government with the national government. It's been unprecedented, the amount of meddling that this government has done in local government. Not just here, but also, if you think about Canterbury. I mean, they sacked the commissioners down, or they sacked the councillors there, and now they're looking at some other kind of reforms for Christchurch because of the earthquake to get rid of central government's role, to get rid of local government's role again. It's like unprecedented.
I don't feel qualified enough to comment on that, but it was definitely a very uneasy and unusual thing when we'll just sack them then, shall we?
Yeah. Well, they're not doing a good job on water permits, so they can bugger off.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, if we said that about the national government, right, they're not doing very well on, making sure that children don't get killed in their families. We should sack them. It's the same kind of thing. During their term. So, democracy's under threat.
Oh, here we go.
right. Back to the plan.
Yes, I was just about to say, do you want to talk some more about some of the snippets? What are the particular things that struck you during the Unleashed
Oh, the summit. Oh, I did personally feel very unleashed. it doesn't take much.
That was on the boat on the way home, everybody, but we won't go there.
Is this tabloid radio?
Definitely not. Keep it clean.
Okay.
Miss Green.
What I like about it is that there are 32 questions that is posed to people, so you can actually flip through this document quite easily, and there are specific questions that the mayor and the councillors are wanting feedback on, and those questions, I'll just find some. What is your preference for the form of potential additional harbour crossing? Tunnel, another bridge, what, you know, and why? How do we ensure our rural areas are maintained? Do we need to develop more controls on building? Mm. Do we need to have a focus for developers to ensure that they're, or, you know, focus and incentives to ensure that they're building within the urban limits rather than sprawling out? And that's to deal with, you know, urban sprawl.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do we maintain our wild areas and our coastal areas? What should we be doing there?
Okay.
So it takes into account a whole bunch of stuff that's been done in the past. You know, yeah. These just didn't come out of nowhere.
The nair, no.
So there's been regional growth strategies. There's been national environmental national strategies around coastal development and that sort of thing as well. The regional land transport strategy. All sorts of different plans have gone into formulating a whole bunch of this. I'm just trying to find some more of the questions. There was some really good stuff around young people and some quite amazing statistics. If I can find the right page. It was basically that... Where is it? Damn, I have to keep talking.
You're looking
flip.
For no, it's okay. So yeah. There was lots of different sort of workshops and things that went on as well.
There was this was a way of trying to harness the. There were about 400 people there, and it was a way of trying to harness the thoughts from those 400 people there, because they were it was pretty high level. There were. And I saw people like the Conservator of Auckland there. I saw the head of Te Puni Kōkere there. Māori Statutory Board people there were representatives from the Finance Department of the Tainui Iwi. And actually this plan does say that iwi are shaping up to be economic powerhouses, which we kind of know because of the treaty settlements.
Absolutely.
And it's like how do councils work with iwi to ensure that the needs of the people are taken into account and to ensure that they're investing in our communities as well.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's a really, really good way of ensuring that everybody is included.
Yeah. Mm. Well, it's kind of like, oh, they've got the money.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say that, but yes.
That way. It's like those treaty settlements. How do we get the rich people involved?
Yeah. Just say it like it is, lady.
Yeah, well, you know, it's taken quite a long time for the Treaty of Waitangi to be recognised. So it's now like, oh, how do we get some of that? Oh, well, that's me being very cynical.
No, you?
Moi? there's some issues around housing, of course, whether the population growth is what should the Auckland plan be saying
whether
about
to go
housing?
Out or up.
Yeah. Increasing density rather than urban sprawl. I mean, that's much better for the environment in terms of transport. But it's kind of how do you do that and maintain the quality of life and affordable.
Yeah, because that's something that was done in the UK, that whole sort of mass housing thing and the whole going up. And tower blocks were the biggest disaster of UK housing ever conceived of, because the whole sort of fabric of communities, whilst they thought, I mean, the idea was when they were brought in I think it was maybe the 60s, before my time, but I'm pretty sure that was when they sort of started coming in, 60s and 70s, these sort of tower blocks. And people thought that they'd be almost like self-contained communities and they'd have shops in the bottom and stuff like that. But unfortunately, what happened was they became really dangerous places and really, really degraded areas, and families actually
sort of didn't work well in them. There were no green spaces, or if the there were green spaces, they were taken over by, say, the rougher elements of there. And it was
What happens when you start to create sort of like silos of low cost housing. Mm. So what they talk about these days is mixed housing, so that you do not get rid of all the low cost housing out of the Remu areas.
Yeah,
because to do that you'd just be
displacing so many people.
Yeah, but
as well.
you also lose diversity in communities,
of course.
But also you create unsafe communities by just having all the poor people. You know, the slums. You create a slum,
exactly.
And,
yeah,
and that's not what we're after.
No, that's.
And I have to say, you know, in London, some of those poorer council areas in East London and places like that have spent vast amounts of time, energy, and money in addressing a lot of those social issues and developing
huge
and building
regeneration.
Community.
Yeah. But and this is just a personal perspective, but my issue is that that having seen that happen in Hume in Manchester, one of the poor, and Moss Side, a couple of the poorest areas in the country, they did this whole thing of building some private housing amongst that to try and reintroduce the diversity, and sadly it's worked a little bit, but nothing like to the extent that was hoped for. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, no,
I could talk about all of that for hours, actually.
Well, that's one of the things that this plan does talk at. There's a whole area called strategic priority number 2, reducing inequalities.
Great.
Because housing's tied up with it. Education is another area. And Auckland has at the moment, it's got a phenomenal amount of young people. I was looking for the graph, which, again, I'm flipping through it. But there's... I think it was something like 30% of our people are under 24.
30%? Right.
And it will increase. I think that's what it is. I can't find the exact figure. But the other thing is that a lot of our people are undereducated.
Mm.
So that whole, education determines employment,
sure,
and
just income. and your choice, your whole that opens up different choices for you.
So there's a whole focus on pushing money into trying to get young people to succeed at school, into training and tertiary education and work.
Right.
So there's suggestions like investigating the option of an Auckland Council having a cadetship scheme, similar to a trade training apprenticeship, for supporting young school leaders without firm plans or qualifications.
School leavers, yeah.
Well, it's called Auckland Youth, Not in Employment, Education or Training, so NEET.
Okay.
Yeah, and
that idea's got some merit.
It's got a lot of merit, actually, and I think back to my peer group when we were, so this was when we were leaving school, early 80s, and there were cadetships and apprenticeships that you could pile into, but that was completely dismantled as well. The Mayoral Task Force for Jobs, which Auckland City Council pulled out of last term because that's what they do, actually looked at a whole range of different policies and programs that you could be putting in place to encourage young people into work, and cadetship celebrations was one of those.
Mm.
So this council or this plan is suggesting that they work closely with that Mayoral Task Force that basically tries to pull together government funding and government agencies as well as the council resources to address that issue of getting young people into training.
I think that's a fabulous idea. I'd just like to touch, we've only got a couple of minutes left, I'd just like to touch on something else that you mentioned when we were talking earlier, and that was the infrastructure and funding.
Yeah.
So let's say there was a less than subtle message coming through that central government wasn't interested in being the funder for creating the infrastructure for one of the main cities in New Zealand. Kind of don't get that, and that would have been a real big red flag for me. Okay, but let's just let that one go a little bit. So what was he suggesting was the alternative then? Where is it going to come from?
Well, the economists who were speaking at the Auckland Unleashed were suggesting a range of different methods. Most of them are controversial, so this is where you start have to have the discussion, because we can't, you know, we have to do something. That's a given. So we have to do something. The cost of it is phenomenal. We can't rely on the government paying for it all, although they are, you know, through the Land Transport Agency, they should stump up for some. There are mechanisms like rates, which I don't think we're going to be very happy with, but there's other mechanisms like fuel taxes, which this government took off us, and we have got $7 million left over that they haven't allocated and we haven't spent. So I don't know where it's blooming well gone, but Stephen Joyce should give it back. Whoops. Proselytizing again. But what the economists were saying, and I get a bit freaked out when they start saying this, they were talking about PPPs, public-private partnerships.
Yep.
Yes, no, there's pros and cons to that. The other one is road tolls, toll roads.
Yeah.
Which they think is a very sophisticated one, but I think it just sort of increases the disparity between the haves and the have-nots.
Oh, thank you. I was just about to say, and those people that can barely afford to even run a car at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it'll just be the rich people on the road anyway. So there's those kind of things. But I think these are the measures that we need to be looking at as well. And one is if we are going to be looking at private-public partnerships, and we should be partnering with, you know, we should maybe be investigating iwi resources.
Right. Okay.
But I would feel much happier with that than I would with an offshore international overseas company.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. I've got to say though, I still have a huge, I haven't read the document. This is just
I'm only up to page 114 and it goes,
oh,
up.
You slacker. Since
I know
Wednesday.
I am sorry.
But I do have an issue with who's it going to benefit? It's going to benefit the whole country if Auckland does become the most livable city. So I believe that the majority of the funding should come from
central.
Yeah, I do. Well, I know a lot of people will probably disagree with me and go, well, that's our tax money and da da da. Don't care, actually. But that's just my humble opinion.
Well, I'm with you on that, but I think there needs to be some mechanisms that we can look at, and we should be. My philosophy has always been that we should be taxing those who can most afford it.
Yep.
Yes, we do have to support business, definitely.
Of course we do.
Because that's where
our economy is based on, yeah.
So I agree with that entirely. And we also need to make sure that we don't create more disparity by placing in some pretty, you know,
harsh.
Blunt and harsh tools that just, that make life difficult.
Yeah, that's my thoughts with that as well. Yeah. Well, listen, thank you very much. Are there going to be workshops and summits and things?
Yeah, there will be. There will be truckloads of them, actually. We've got, there's about, you can actually
access the document.
You can access the document. You should be able to get it from the library. I didn't check, but I'm pretty sure you should be able to.
Can most of them, yeah.
Yeah. You can go online to www.aucklandcouncil.govt and just type in Auckland Unleashed and you'll get all sorts of things for that. There is a timetable for workshops around probably the isthmus. We need to look at doing them on Waiheke as well, but I think we've got about 8 months to do feedback on this.
Okay.
And we're a bit sort of squished for time because we're also doing our local board plan at the moment and doing community engagement around that, asking people to give us some ideas about what we want here on Waiheke.
Yeah, there's a public meeting tomorrow, isn't there?
Tomorrow, 2 o'clock, Ostend Hall. Thank you. And there'll be listening posts down in Onirua on Tuesday with me and Faye and Jim, I think, and we're doing stakeholder workshops, and I talked to the kids at the high school on Thursday to say, listen, nobody ever asks you what you want for Waiheke in the next 10 years. We'd actually like your ideas.
Great.
So we're doing that right through April, March, April, and then come back with a draft plan to for people to consult on formally. But at this stage, it's about gathering up ideas. So,
cool.
So we've got that process happening alongside this as well. So the Auckland Unleashed will carry on for about 8 months.
Right.
But you've got about 5 weeks to get your ideas through to people on the community board. Oh, sorry. God, old terminology. Through to the local board. We need your ideas about where you think we should be in the next 1, 3, 5, and 10 years. And you can come to the meeting tomorrow, and there'll be another one on the 9th. Towards the end of April.
Right.
Have a look in the Golf News next week.
Okay, so the one tomorrow is 2 o'clock at...
Ostend Hall.
Ostend Hall,
yeah.
Cool. Okay.
And basically it's not a sit on your bum and let people talk at you sort of meeting. It is a come with your ideas and share them with everybody.
Fantastic. Well, there's always lots of people on Waiheke that like to share their ideas, which is part of what makes us so special and unique.
Damn right.
And thank you very much for coming in. And I hope that you'll come back and talk to us again about the next stage of the Unleashed.
Sure, once I finish the next 100 pages.
Yeah, I'll let you. That's your homework for the next month.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Oniroa.